Acts chapter 16, in the last handful of verses. So this part of Acts, is it working? No? Technology's not working. All right, I guess it's just audio this week. All right, so Acts chapter 16. So this part of Acts is kind of interesting because we go from city to city to city fairly quickly in a handful of verses. And there's kind of a pattern that develops. And so just as a refresher, the early parts of Acts chapter 16, we're going to be in verse 35 today and forward. But in the earlier part of Acts chapter 16, Paul was preaching, and they had the lady that was screaming, and they cast out the demon, and then they go to prison, and they're praising and worshiping, and the foundations are shook, and the doors fly open, and the chains fall off, and the guard's going to kill himself. And a whole bunch of people get saved. And that is all in the night. And now it's morning. And so morning comes after all of that. And Acts chapter 16, verse 35 to 40 says, "The next morning, the city officials sent the police to tell the jailer, 'Let those men go.' So the jailer told Paul, 'The city officials said, you and Silas are free to leave. Go in peace.'" Most of us would be like, "Yes, I'm out of jail," but not Paul. Paul replies, "They have publicly beaten us without a trial and put us in prison, and we are Roman citizens. So now they want us to leave secretly? Certainly not. Let them come themselves to release us." And when the police reported this, the city officials were alarmed to learn that Paul and Silas were Roman citizens. So they came to the jail and apologized to them. Then they brought them out and begged them to leave the city. When Paul and Silas left the prison, they returned to the home of Lydia. And there they met with the believers and encouraged them once more. Then they left town. So number one, Paul and Silas were publicly beaten for their faith, and now the city officials want them to just quietly exit the back door. Now, when people are leaving the church, yeah, quietly exit the back door. Don't stir up a fuss. And then Paul brings up the fact that they are Roman citizens. Now, had they been just a couple of Jews, it would have been different, because remember, the Jews had been conquered. They were part under Roman authority at this point, but they weren't Roman citizens. And so it wouldn't have been a big deal because they were, you know, the captors. They had been captured or overtaken by Rome. And so if they were Israelites and Jews, it wouldn't have mattered. But because they were both Roman citizens, there was a due process in Rome, and they should have gotten a trial. They should have had opportunity to plead their case, and they certainly should not have been publicly beaten for a crime without a trial. And as Roman citizens, what took place was wrong, and Paul wanted them to know it. So the officials, they complied and led Paul and Silas out of the prison publicly, but still begged them, "Shh, just leave quietly, just go." For a couple of reasons. One, the officials are afraid that if they lodge a complaint with Rome about what just took place, these guys could lose their authority, their position, their influence, their status, their heads, yep, all of it. But Paul had another reason. He wanted them to escort them out publicly. Because had they just slipped out the door quietly as they were asked, the crowd would have assumed that all of those accusations were true. And Paul wanted it demonstrated that those accusations were wrong, they were innocent, everything was false. He wanted them to go on YouTube and make a clip so that everybody knew the truth. Because there's truth in YouTube. Thanks. Apparently the coffee wasn't enough today. So the mob is yelling and shouting, and the people are hearing these accusations. I feel like it's a parallel with what we experience every day. There is so much information at our fingertips. Who knows what's right and what's wrong and what's true and what's false? There's so much deceit and trickery, and now with computers and AI and all of the tech. Our son Jake used to love to watch these videos, and they would call it bad lip reading, and it would be like of all the football players on the sideline, and they would be mumbling or talking something to their teammates, and then they would do like a voiceover, and they would say all kinds of ridiculous things. And they were funny. But it was amazing, even back then, you know, this is 7-8 years ago, how incredibly accurate it appeared what they were saying. And now technology has advanced so far, we don't know. Paul wants the people to see the city officials lead them out to demonstrate by their actions that the accusations were not true. Paul is a smart man. He is playing the long game. He knows God has a plan and a purpose. He wants to get to Greece and he wants to get to Rome. He's going to comply and he's going to leave town, but before doing so, he's going to make sure that the groundwork is laid so that anybody that stays behind, Luke stays in Thessalonica and ministers to the people there. This is the last of the we phrases with Luke traveling with Paul and company. And he stays here, and we'll see in a few chapters how he's still there. And Paul's got to make sure the groundwork is set so that they can continue to minister, so that the seeds that were sown in the people that accepted the Lord don't go, oh, these guys are a bunch of liars and they're turning the world upside down, but that they can build their faith. So Paul has a plan. So they then in Acts chapter 17, it says, Paul and Silas then traveled through Amphipolis and Apollonia. They have great names over there. And came to Thessalonica, where there was a Jewish synagogue. Now we're in Thessalonica, sorry. And as was Paul's custom, he went to the synagogue service. And for 3 Sabbaths in a row, he used the scriptures to reason with the people. He explained the prophecies and proved that the Messiah must suffer and rise from the dead. He said, "This Jesus I'm telling you about is the Messiah." Some of the Jews who listened were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, along with many God-fearing Greek men and quite a few prominent women. So the gospel prevails, number 2. Paul and Silas, even after being beaten and thrown in prison, they continue to boldly preach. And it was Paul's custom that he would go to the synagogue first. And he would use the prophecies of Christ to begin teaching that Jesus was indeed the Messiah. And it says in Thessalonica, many came to know the Lord, both Jews and Greeks, along with some prominent women. So why does that matter? It is likely that these women, man, I'm having a day. It was likely that these women were connected to prominent city officials, which is going to affect who gets influenced and how they get influenced. And so, despite rejection, despite a beating, Paul and Silas remained faithful, continued preaching the gospel. People continue to get saved. And then this is what happens in Thessalonica. Verse 5 says, some of the Jews were jealous. Some of the Jews were jealous, so they gathered some troublemakers from the marketplace to form a mob and start a riot. This sounds like modern political tactics. They attacked the home of Jason, searching for Paul and Silas so they could drag them out to the crowd. Not finding them there, they dragged out Jason and some of the other believers instead and took them before the city council. Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world, they shouted. Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world. And now they're here disturbing our city too. And Jason has welcomed them into his home. Way to go. They are all guilty of treason against Caesar, for they profess allegiance to another king named Jesus. The people of the city, as well as the city council, were thrown into turmoil by these reports. So the officials forced Jason and other believers to post bond, and then they released them. This is where those prominent women come in, because it's possible that Jason and the believers are drug out of the house, brought before city council. It's possible that some of those city council members' wives were in that crowd. Talk about a conflict of interest. And it throws the whole thing into turmoil. And we have angry mobs again. Jealousy rears its ugly head. The crowd is whipped into a frenzy. Only this time they can't find Paul and Silas, so they grab Jason and whomever else they can get a hold of and pull them into it. Now, there's a whole bunch going on here, and when you go through 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, there's more light shed on this situation. But basically, the summary is the persecution and the intensity of the people coming against the believers in Thessalonica was intense. And I'm going to point out just a couple of things and then move to this next section so we can tie this all together. In verse 6 is the accusation. They drag out Jason and company, and they grab the first believers they can find, regardless of guilt or innocence, and they say, Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world. When the enemy brings accusations against you, and he will, he is going to bring up the most ridiculous things he can. Why? He doesn't just want you to be defeated. He wants you to be crushed. There is no hope for you. You can't participate in these things. God can't use you. You know what you did. You know the thoughts you had. You know the words that came out of your mouth. Why would God use you? How could God use you? The enemy wants you to feel like life is futile and there's no reason to push forward. He wants you to remember what a failure you are. In this situation, Jason ends up having to put up bond for Paul and Silas. And then they're told to leave town again. And this situation comes up later in the scriptures because Paul, because of this whole situation, is prevented from returning. And the enemy is going to use whatever he can to keep the gospel from impacting your life, to keep the gospel from impacting a community like it is here in Thessalonica, like it is here in Nampa. And he's going to use whatever ridiculousness. They are raising turmoil in the world, the entire world. The enemy doesn't want you to feel success. The enemy doesn't want you to experience joy. He wants to crush you. And he'll tell whatever lies he can or has to get you to believe that your life has no value, that you can't have any impact. Verse 10 says, that very night, the believers sent Paul and Silas to Berea. When they arrived there, they went to the Jewish synagogue. And they picked this city because it wasn't, Paul and Silas had been traveling along this highway, essentially, that was a pretty major route. And so they sent them a different direction into a little bit more remote area, thinking maybe all of this persecution will subside in this area. So when they get there, verse 11, when they arrived there, they went to the synagogue. Verse 11, the people of Berea were more open-minded than those in Thessalonica, and they listened eagerly to Paul's message. They searched the scriptures day after day to see if Paul and Silas were teaching the truth. As a result, many Jews believed, as did many of the prominent Greek women and men. But when some Jews in Thessalonica learned that Paul was preaching the word of God in Berea, they went there and stirred up trouble. The believers acted at once, sending Paul onto the coast while Silas and Timothy remained behind. Those escorting Paul went with him all the way to Athens. Then they returned to Berea with instructions for Silas and Timothy to hurry and join him. So it's all on repeat. We go to a city, and the people rise up against, and we move on. And we go to a city, and the people respond to the word, and then opposition comes. The people are eager here to hear the gospel. Their faith builds. In fact, it says they searched the scripture day after day to see if what they were being taught was true. Notice Paul doesn't have to write a letter to this church like he does some of the others. We want to be the church he doesn't have to write a letter to. This little group of believers grows spiritually, numerically, and again, influential people hear the gospel and respond. The Jews catch wind of it in Thessalonica. They get mad and they send people to interfere. They're so mad, they send people 50 miles away to cause trouble in this other city. Paul never read the book, How to Win Friends. He could influence people, but he wasn't so good at winning friends. everywhere. They were stirred up. So there's a couple of things that I feel like we see on repeat. Luke gives us a pretty detailed picture of the first city, and then the next couple of cities, it's a little bit more of a summary, because the same thing is happening over and over. And Paul, or Luke, is drawing this picture for us of what they were experiencing. So there's a couple of things that I think are on repeat. One, jealousy, pride, those two things go hand in hand. They're cousins. Jealousy arises from fear of losing something you value. Sometimes a relationship or a possession, a perceived rival. And it's usually a three-person dynamic. These two are friends, and then a third party comes in, and somebody gets jealous, has insecurities, pride. Pride is characterized by an inflated sense of self-importance or an excessive view of one's abilities or achievements. When we get full of ourselves because we think we are the one. It can be competitive in nature, focusing on having more than other people, keeping up with the Joneses kind of a thing. And what can happen is pride can lead to unhealthy competition, feelings of entitlement, which is what we're seeing here. Reluctance to seek help or admit mistakes. We see it warnings throughout Scripture about that. You know, the enemy doesn't have to conjure up new ways to get at people, new problems to cause. Because he's got one thing that he can use that is a constant through all of history. And that's people. All people are affected by jealousy, by pride, by insecurity. And like most things in life, it's about how we respond to those things. How do we respond when the influence we have in life is affected? We all have influence over other people. Maybe it's coworkers, maybe it's family members. But we all have influence over people around us, and we all have people influencing us. So how do we respond when our life is affected? The Jews, they got angry. These people of influence and power were coming to know Jesus, and they were drawn to Paul and Silas and Luke. And the influence the Jews have was slipping away. The businessmen got angry. They were losing their money. No more idol worship. Okay, Paul, we won't worship idols. Whoa. You need to buy this idol because this demon-possessed girl says you need to worship this idol. And so the businessmen got mad because their pocketbook was affected. And then they formed these angry mobs, and Paul and Silas are beaten, and they're shouting all of these things out, and it begins to influence crowds. Yeah, we got these people, they don't like Paul anymore. They beat him, they threw him in prison. When you remove influence from a person's life, they respond negatively. Especially if they feel like they're starting to lose control. we had one instance where we were on staff at a church, and we just started doing what we do. We just started connecting to people and meeting them and getting to know them and encouraging them. And man, I got in so much trouble. Because the senior pastor was starting to lose influence, which meant he was losing control. And so he made life difficult and found other things for me to do so that I wouldn't influence people. Sometimes it's just somebody that's found a group of people that won't say anything about their behaviors. But as soon as they're confronted about their behaviors, the response from them, you see a whole new person. Because all of a sudden, somebody's saying, whoa, you can't do that. Hey, you can't act like this. Hey, we're not going to tolerate that. And then that anger rises up within them because you're taking away. They puff up, invade your personal space. Maybe they raise their voice a little to make their point known. Or maybe they intensify their tone a little bit. All to maintain influence over the situation or the people or the group. The enemy was trying to maintain influence over these communities. Through city officials, businessmen, religious leaders, jealousy, pride, all of these things so that they wouldn't experience or encounter the love of Christ. The same tactics are used today. I think there's at least a couple of articles this week of religious leaders that fell for one reason or another. Another religious organization's getting sued for millions of dollars by another famous person. And I mean, all kinds of stuff. And the enemy will do whatever he can. And if he can take these high-profile people down, he's going to do it. The enemy uses the same tactics in our personal lives. He will tell you every lie he can to keep you defeated, to keep you pushed down, to keep you contained, restrained. One of the quickest ways he can achieve victory over each one of us is to mentally defeat you, to... One of the things we do in any kind of a competition is we strive to mentally defeat our opponents. You can get an advantage super quick. Can't tell anymore, but I used to run cross country. And so one of the tactics that they taught us, because cross country is, you know, when you up north, it was trails and through the mountains and trees and sometimes on golf courses. And so what they would tell you is, when you're going around a corner, especially if it's a corner where the other runners can't see you very well, just for like 10 or 20 yards, run really fast. So that when that runner comes around the corner, they see the distance has increased. And mentally, you begin to defeat them. And they go, I must be slowing down. They're pulling away. I'm never going to catch them. And you, in all kinds of activities that we participate in, we have these mental games we use to overcome our opponents. And it's the same thing that the enemy uses against us, because if he can defeat me up here before I even get started, what else does he need to do? I'm not going to church today. The people there don't really like me. That guy just rambles on and on. I'll just stay home and watch something on TV. I can't serve in the church. I don't have anything to offer. It can be quite a mental battle as the enemy whispers doubts in our minds, reminds us of our failures and our insecurities. But when we come together in community, we can be a Barnabas to one another. We can be an encourager to one another. We can lift each other up. We can build each other up. The other thing that we see happen over and over and over in every one of these cities is there's community. They're gathered at Lydia's house. They're gathered at Jason's house. In Berea, somebody's not named, but the community is together, and they escort Paul out together and get him to Athens, and then they return. There's community in every one of these cities. A community is built where they can encourage and build up one another. Today's supper club. Why? Because it's a fun thing to do, because we want you to have to bake early in the morning before church. Because it's an opportunity to create community so that we can build relationship and get to know one another. Family fun night is on Tuesday, and it's going to be hot, but it'll be fun. And we'll have burgers, and we'll have dogs, and we'll have activities. Why? So we can build community, so we can get to know one another, so that when I see you sitting there, I can determine, are they just tired, or are they going through something? Do they need some encouragement? How can we build one another up? Sometimes it's as simple as a handshake and a hug. To be reminded, man, there's people around me that care about me. I can do this. I can keep moving forward. I can keep overcoming. We participated in communion today. By his blood, by his stripes, we can overcome. We can experience victory. We can experience success. We can move forward. We can overcome all of those terrible thoughts, all of the depression and anxiety. I never even heard that word until the last decade and a half. You know, they just keep renaming everything and changing it so it fits the narrative, right? Oh, kids, you can't do anything anymore. You're too full of anxiety. And the kids go, I know, I'm so full of anxiety. We used to call that, when you got ready for a competition, is nerves. I got butterflies in my stomach. Yeah, that's because you're excited. You're about to compete. You got anxiety. You probably shouldn't do that. We just switch it to get the people to do what we want them to do. We just switch it so we can keep them down, because we don't want to lose influence. There's a whole lot going on as Paul is moving from city to city. And there's a lot that we can learn and a lot that we can pull from. But I think we see how jealousy destroys the people. And we see how community keeps the gospel moving forward. And that's what we want to do. We want to keep the gospel moving forward. We want to build people up. We want to encourage people. We want to give people opportunity for ministry, opportunity to be involved in the things that God has for them. And an opportunity to experience acceptance and love, encouragement. Because some of us don't experience those things other places. So we're going to pray. We're going to bless the food. We're going to multiply the food just in case. And then we're just going to pray that all those lies the enemy is throwing at us to distract us and to slow us down and pull us down, that we can push those things out of our mind and say, Lord, I'm following you. Father, I pray for each one that's here this morning.